Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Ultimate Women's Health Summit. I'm Gail Sapone, and I'm your host. And today, my special guest is Alana Amsterdam. Alana is a wellness expert and gluten-free guru and a New York Times bestselling author of the book Paleo Cooking from Alana's Pantry and founder of the blog alanaspantry.com, where she shares simple, healthy recipes and lifestyle advice. Her other books include the Gluten-Free Almond Flour Cookbook, which was named one of the best cookbooks of the year by the Denver Post, and she also has another cookbook called Gluten-Free Cupcakes. Hi, Alana, and welcome.
Thanks so much, Gail. It's great to meet you.
Yes, you too. I'm excited.
Me too.
Before we get started, I just want to let everyone know that I happen to have the Gluten-Free Almond Flour Cookbook, and I can tell you the recipes are delicious. So why don't we get started? And
we're going to have to send you a copy of Paleo Cooking.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Yes, I'd be interested to know how you got into paleo. Were you always in paleo?
Paleo has really kind of become really popular in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And so it's a label that we use so people that are following that diet can find me. But I've actually, I'm grain-free, and I have been grain-free since 2001.
Okay.
That's almost 13 years. But people will notice on my website that I started calling things paleo recently,
mm-hmm.
not really because of any dietary change I've made, but just for Internet searchability, so the people that need my recipes can find my recipes.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah.
good to know. Great. So why don't we start with you telling us about your background in the healing arts?
Well, I was very into, I guess you could say, the healing of Mother Earth was how it all started, because I founded an environmental consulting company in New York City in 1993, I think it was, way back when. And I set up recycling programs for the biggest retail companies in the country. With that business. And then while I was doing that, I got really as well into studying Ayurveda and herbs and yoga and became a yoga teacher. And then a few years later, if you fast forward, that all came in really handy when I had my children. And when I had my children was when a number of my health issues started, which I think can happen for many women. In their 30s or late 20s or early 40s or whenever they're in the childbearing years. Pregnancy, as I'm sure you know, can become an autoimmune event because
mm-hmm.
The immune system is so differently, I guess, regulated when you have another body inside you.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually was diagnosed with celiac disease when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And I went on the gluten-free diet and found really very little relief in the symptoms I had, the digestive distress that I had from celiac disease. And so 3 years later, I went on a grain-free diet. And I have been strictly grain-free ever since, and that has worked tremendously well for me. So that was a very long-winded answer to your short question, Gail.
Oh, no, that's good to know. That's great. So you didn't just eliminate gluten. You eliminated all grains.
I did not just initially in 1998 when I was diagnosed with celiac disease, I just eliminated gluten,
okay.
which some people may or may not know is a protein found in wheat, rye, and barley. So I eliminated those three grains. Now, I was kind of, you're eliminating a lot because there's
yes.
gluten not just in bread but in soy sauce and salad dressing and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But when I didn't see the results that I was looking for, I eliminated grains. So that's rice, quinoa, millet. A lot of people call quinoa and millet seeds, but they're grain-like substances. And I found that my digestion was best when I eliminated even grains, all grains and even grain-like substances. And I actually, only because I can't digest them, I don't eat white potatoes or sweet potatoes even.
Mm.
Yeah. And those aren't grains. But for me,
right.
I need to eliminate them. That's
right.
a personal thing.
Yeah. And I've heard that before. I've heard about the potatoes and sweet potatoes before. Okay, so how did this come in handy when you were diagnosed with celiac disease?
I think the just the knowledge of food and being having studied Ayurveda came in super handy when I was diagnosed with celiac disease, because I had been trained to look at basically how the body functions. Ayurveda is just an amazing, incredible system. It's very similar to Chinese medicine, and I have a lot of friends that are traditional Chinese medicine practitioners and acupuncturists, and we have a lot of fun talking about the amazing similarities between traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda. So I think anyone that's had a background in the healing arts is going to hopefully use it on themselves. That doesn't happen all the time when they're diagnosed with anything. And people really view celiac disease as a, you know, they think it's just like an upset stomach or disease of the digestive system, but it's actually an autoimmune condition, and it's considered a gateway autoimmune disorder and can lead to things like thyroid issues, Hashimoto's, diabetes, and all scleroderma, all kinds of multiple sclerosis, all kinds of other autoimmune disorders. So it's very important when someone is diagnosed with celiac disease that they go on a 100% gluten-free diet. Not doing so is kind of like getting finding out you have the lung cancer gene and smoking. You're just killing yourself slowly.
Yeah, wow. I didn't know that Ayurveda and Chinese medicine were that closely related or connected.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Well, yeah.
So I have to tell you this. When I suspected I had a gluten sensitivity, I was looking around, and one day I heard a cashier at Trader Joe's talking about the fact that she was gluten-free, and I asked her, I said, you know, where do you find recipes? And she said, go to alanaspantry.com.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's so nice to hear. Thanks, Gail.
Isn't that great? See?
That's wonderful.
Doing grocery shopping, we hear about you.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you.
So when and why did you start your blog?
Well, I think I started it for the very reason that you're talking about, so that I could help people and people could help each other, people looking to eat. I mean, the primary thing, even though I'm known as a gluten-free blogger and a paleo blogger, the real thing is just eating whole foods. And that's something I've done since my Ayurvedic training. And so I just happen to be gluten-free and grain-free. And what I love showing people on my blog is that you can have what people consider a deprivation for, you know, is what people think of it as, and not being able to eat gluten. But really, if you look at the recipes on my blog, there's no deprivation there. There's cream of cauliflower soup, which I don't put any dairy in. I'd say 99% of my recipes are dairy-free on the website, and in my new book, it's 100% dairy-free, which I did for my dairy-free readers. But you can find everything from roasted broccoli to cauliflower soup to roasted chicken. Those are things that anyone will eat. And then the exciting thing, I think, that makes the blog really special and different from other blogs is there's also dessert from a lot of other blogs is that I also have desserts that taste just like real gourmet treats or regular comfort foods, but they just happen to be gluten and grain-free and naturally sweetened with honey or coconut sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and so when we have Thanksgiving dinner at my house, we're having a traditional meal. We're having the gravy. We're having the stuffing that I make with grain-free bread, which my kids and husband eat. One of my sons also has celiac, but my husband and younger son do not have celiac, and they can eat anything they want, but my kitchen is strictly gluten-free, and like I was saying, when we have Thanksgiving, we'll have the turkey and the gravy and the stuffing and the cranberry sauce, and then for dessert, I'll make a few pies. I love making pies. And those will all have gluten-free almond flour crusts, grain-free crusts. This year we had pumpkin pie, chocolate pecan pie. I made an apple crisp with a gluten-free, grain-free topping. I made chocolate pumpkin pudding and a bunch of other fun things.
Mm. Making me hungry, Alana.
Hey, come on over. I'll pass you some through the phone.
Okay. That would be better. I don't think I want to be in Denver right now.
Oh, my gosh. I know. gets a little chilly here in the winter.
Yes. So how did that lead, how did your blog lead to writing cookbooks?
Well, I started my blog to help people and get the recipes that my friends and family were asking for, my recipes, and moms in the parking lot at my children's school. And so I put up the blog, and I ended up getting an agent, a wonderful agent in New York, and one thing led to another, and I got the book deal. And I think it was really going way back. My children are teenagers now, and it was when they were in kindergarten and first grade. I'd bring desserts to the Waldorf school where they were, and the kids, I'd give them to the kids, even the children that weren't gluten-free. And I kind of knew I was onto something when the children would see me with a box of treats and they would swarm around me at the pickup place. And I was like, that's funny, these are gluten-free. Like, and kids don't try to be nice to you and eat your food when they don't like it. I was like, I think they really like it. Because kids are the best taste testers. They'll just spit something out if they don't like the taste. And then I ended up the next year while they were at the Waldorf School, and in they moved from kindergarten and first to first and second, I offered all the children in both my boys' classes, I told their parents that I would make whatever birthday treat they wanted, and they could choose the treat, and I would bake it up for them. And that was like a win-win-win, because the moms didn't have to make something or buy something for their children. And then the second win was that my son got to break bread with his friends. And never underestimate the power or disempowerment of not being able to break bread with your loved ones and friends. So that was really important to me, that he got to feel like he was a part of something. And then the third win was I was, instead of using like high glycemic flours for gluten-free treats like rice flour or tapioca starch or things like that, I was using high-protein almond flour and high-fiber coconut flour. So these kids were getting, you know, as healthy a dessert as they possibly could. So the parents loved that. I have to say they loved that. And that gave me quite a lot of practice and ended up leading to my writing the cookbooks and posting a lot of those recipes on my website.
Oh, wow. That's a great story. I noticed, I was going to ask you if you used any other flour besides almond flour, because I noticed that you use that a lot in your recipes. And so you did kind of tell us that the rice flour and the tapioca flour is more higher glycemic.
Yeah, and the funny thing about almond flour is that not only is it healthier than high glycemic typical gluten-free flours such as white rice flour, brown rice flour, potato starch, and tapioca flour, it's also healthier than wheat flour itself. It's higher in protein and has good fats that your body needs. So, you know, I feel good when I see my husband and my boys and all their friends eating those high-protein, gluten-free brownies, grain-free brownies that I have on the counter after school. Because I know, like with the children in the at the Waldorf school when the boys were little, that they're getting something that's not just healthier than most gluten-free desserts, it's healthier than most wheat flour desserts, if not all.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And so what is your goal in providing recipes? People.
I think my goal is something that we've touched on a little bit here today, which is helping people eat healthier and eat whole foods, and then also allowing people who do have food restrictions to break bread with their loved ones by making comfort food and gourmet foods, but they're always easy. Don't be scared by the word gourmet. A lot of my recipes have six ingredients or less, but I'm making those like types of foods that are light gourmet and comfort foods so that I can eat what my husband's going to eat, and he's still going to like it, and I'm going to get to eat safely.
Yeah.
So that's my goal in providing recipes to people.
Great.
I wanted to add one little tip. When we were talking about almond flour and coconut flour, and this is something I hear on my website a lot in the comments section, people always want to know if they can exchange one in place of the other, and you really cannot use coconut flour in a recipe that calls for almond flour or vice versa. They're very, very different flours, and I have sometimes people will try to change it, and they'll come on and they'll be sad and say, it didn't work, why didn't it work? And I'll ask them, what kind of flour did you use, even though it says almond flour, and they'll say coconut, and then I'll say, well, that's the culprit. because coconut is very, flour is very dry, and you need like a couple of eggs per ounce of coconut flour. Whereas in an almond flour baking recipe, you're just going to use a couple of eggs in the whole recipe. Mm. So coconut flour is very dry, and don't use it in place of almond flour.
Yeah.
And there's so many recipes on the internet. I also get a lot of people that want to know, like, can I use this instead of that in your recipes? But there's so many amazing bloggers. Like, if you do want to make brownies that I have on my website, but you want to use rice flour, then I always recommend that people go to another site, because they're going to get a tested recipe on another site that uses rice flour, right, rather than experimenting and potentially having a recipe that doesn't work out,
right,
by not using the ingredients that are called for. That's probably the most common question I get on my website. Can I do substitution?
Yeah.
I don't recommend it.
I know you don't, because reading your blog, you're very clear. You say, you know, you need to use the rest of the ingredients that I have here.
Yeah.
Because you've tested, you know, I'm sure you've had a lot of failures here and there, too.
Oh, all the time. Everything is a failure until it's a success. Like, you know, I'm making paleo vanilla cupcakes right now. I have them in the oven. The house smells really good right now. But I'm on my eighth or ninth round of baking those. Like, I want the tops to brown perfectly. I want to make sure once it works that I make it a couple more times to make sure I wrote it down correctly. Like, everything is really tested. And I do get a lot of feedback from people that they do like using my site because I've tested things, I guess I could say, maniacally. Yeah, that's the word.
But that's good to know. That's good to know. So what do you do, or what do you try to do for yourself daily to stay healthy?
Well, I do a few things. I definitely need at least 8 hours of sleep every night. That's probably the first most important part of my personal healing program that I devised for myself a few years ago. There's nothing too exciting in my healing program. It's really boring stuff, like sleeping 8 hours every night on the weeknights and sleeping even more, 9 or 10 on the weekends when I can sleep in. Mm-hmm. Walking. I walk every day for an hour. It's free, and it's low impact on my joints, so I like doing that. You know, sometimes it's not that fun to do all the things we need to do to be healthy. It might mean you don't get to watch television because you choose to go for a walk instead. But in the long run, I know that I'm going to feel better, so that's really important for me. Gluten-free, eating grain-free. I've eaten grain-free since 2014, but I've eaten grain-free since 2001, and I really don't waver on that. I know a lot of people that are paleo or grain-free talk about doing an 80-20 diet, where you're doing 80% of the time paleo grain-free and 20% of the time you're eating that delicious-looking donut at the farmer's market or wherever, but I really don't have the luxury of doing that. Right. So I eat a grain-free diet every day, and that works really well for me. I'm also on the diet component of my healing plan. I am very careful when I eat out at restaurants. I won't eat things with sauces. I'll just get a piece of grilled fish or chicken or meat. I ask them not to spice it other than putting salt and pepper on. Sometimes there's spice rubs that have flour in them. I just am as nice as can be to the waiters and servers, and I definitely grill them, and I always apologize and tell them that I know I'm taking, you know, it's extra work serving someone like me, and even if you're at a nice restaurant, it's a lot more work to serve someone safely than to serve someone like my husband who has no restrictions. So I make sure to communicate very clearly and graciously with the people that are taking our orders. So sleep, exercise, diet, and then I also do, in addition to walking 60 minutes every day, I do, in my house, yoga or just gentle stretching or weightlifting. I have little 5-pound weights. I do that 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. So that's my program.
You're a great example for how to stay healthy, fit, and vital.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you.
You are.
It feels good.
Yes.
Yeah. Creating habits, I think, is the challenge. But once you get those habits ingrained in your brain and carve those neural pathways, oh, my gosh, it's not that hard. Mm-hmm. But no, do not ever underestimate how hard it is to change a habit or make a habit.
Right.
Right. It's really intense. It can take a year of struggling.
Right.
Yeah. I think we all have habits we want to change.
Absolutely. But it's just, to me, it's almost like learning to walk. You fall down, you get back up.
Yeah. And I think also, I love, Gail, I love that analogy. And I think it's also so important, and I'm working on it with myself every day, is when I do fall down, to not yell at myself for falling down.
Right.
But to just say, okay, well, you were trying. Trying is good. Because
right.
I'm a bit of a slave driver with myself and my poor family. I really have, like, quite a work ethic. So I'm always, and I'm a perfectionist, so I'm always someone that needs to work more on being compassionate to myself
mm-hmm.
and to my family because I have such high expectations. And, you know, it's funny, you can sort of, I've learned now to take all the discipline I have and apply it to being a more compassionate person.
Mm-hmm.
And just when I hear that voice start to yell, like, why'd you do that again? Then I'll say, no, it's okay. It's been, you know, you're trying. And trying is the best we can do sometimes.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Learning to be gentle with yourself.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's a lifelong process for me.
For
and I think
some of the
health conditions that I have, I think were from not listening to myself, not being gentle with myself, not respecting my own boundaries of getting enough sleep or not working those extra hours late into the night. Because even though things are genetic and we're born with the gene for celiac, it doesn't have to turn on. So I think it's important that we, you know, take personal responsibility for our health.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. There's a whole amazing field of epigenetics that is
mm-hmm.
just fascinating, and it's about why genes turn on and off. And sometimes it can be things that are out of our control, like you're at Chernobyl and a nuclear, you have a nuclear meltdown. If you have the cancer gene, then you're going to probably end up getting cancer, and there could be, I mean, this is tragic and sad, not going to be a lot that someone in that position can do. But then you have someone who has the cancer gene and is smoking, and that's a choice that they're making that may turn that gene on. So we have a lot of choice and personal responsibility when it comes to our health. It's kind of frightening and overwhelming, actually, when we realize how much we can do. And it's also so exciting and so inspiring.
We're learning so much more about the human body and the self-healing properties. And like you said, food can turn, well, food and environmental factors can turn on and turn off certain genes.
Yeah, and things, food and the environment can be our medicine or it can be our poison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can I just ask you a question about, and, you know, if we don't, I don't expect you to know the answer, but celiac disease, let's say 30 years ago, it was rare.
Yeah, that's a great question, Gail, and I do have an answer for you. You're wondering why it's so prevalent
now?
Yes.
Yeah. It's much more prevalent today.
Yeah. Fascinating question, especially when we're talking about epigenetics. I think a lot of people would like to say that it's because we have better screening now. And I would probably be one of those people that would really wonder if that was the case and have a, you know, lean towards that being a true hypothesis. However, there was a study done on blood samples from people in the military, so, I don't know, decades ago, 50 years ago. And they tested these people and did tests on the blood that were not available 50 years ago or so, and that are available now. And there was less incidence of celiac disease 50 years ago than there is now. So that leads to the question of why. Why do we have higher incidence of celiac disease now than we did decades ago or centuries ago?
Right.
And a lot of people are saying, it's funny, I heard this theory kind of bounced around 5 years ago, and it was considered it would not have been silly to consider it preposterous. There was no scientific backing, but we're getting more scientific backing. People are saying that the way we are not just genetically engineering our wheat and our food, but also the way that we're hybridizing it, and you can do all kinds of grafting and splicing with plants that isn't just genetically modifying it on the cellular level under a microscope. And we've been modifying the gluten, the protein in wheat, for decades. So if you go back 100 years ago, you would go to the baker and buy, I'm going to explain what I mean
sure.
and how that impacts our bodies, if you'll bear with my another long-winded answer.
No,
but,
this is great.
In, you know, a century ago, you'd go to the baker and you'd buy your bread and you'd eat it that day.
Mm-hmm.
People didn't really eat day-old bread too often.
Mm-hmm.
And when they did, it was hard and crusty. Right? We think of like
mm-hmm.
hard and crusty day-old bread when I'm reading historical texts or, you know, things that are set back
right.
100 years. And now what is happening to that bread? We have Wonder Bread and it is on the shelf. It's good for, it, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month. Well, guess what? If it can be stable for that long on the shelf, what the heck is going on in your digestive tract?
Mm.
How hard is that to break down? So what is beneficial for industrialized foods created for the convenience of modernism is terribly bad for our bodies. And I think there's great books like Wheat Belly
mm-hmm.
by William Davis. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list for, I don't know, half a dozen or a dozen weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
He goes into the history of the hybridization and the modification of wheat and talks about why it may not be good for a lot of people. Not just those with celiac. Now, my younger son who doesn't have celiac and my husband who doesn't have celiac, they eat gluten and wheat every day. And that's their choice, and that's fine. But I think anyone with an autoimmune condition, which the two of them don't have, and I've had them both tested, they don't even have the gene for celiac. I think anyone who has an autoimmune condition could possibly be making a mistake by eating gluten. They're going to find in the next 10 years that, and they're starting to come out with early studies that the protein that's called gluten can modulate the immune system in negative ways.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's your very, very, very long answer. Yeah.
No, that's, important. That was an important answer. So our time is almost up, Ilana. Is there anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
I feel like we covered everything. I'm just so grateful that you're putting on the Ultimate Women's Health Summit, and I'm really looking forward to listening to your interviews with other health experts, and I just really appreciate what you're doing. Thanks a lot, Gail.
Oh, well, thank you.
And it's great to be with you. I've really enjoyed getting to know you today.
Yes, you too. So how can people connect with you if they'd like to?
They can go to my website, ilanaspantry.com. And they can also go to, I have over 700 recipes and over 1,000 pages on that website. It is chock full of information and recipes pertaining to a lot of the things we spoke about today. And I'm also very active on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Ilana's Pantry. And on Facebook, I have a fan page called Ilana's Pantry. It's just Ilana's Pantry as well, sorry. And I'm on those two social media outlets, and I talk to my readers over there.
Oh, great,
yeah.
Great.
And
well,
love to connect with people.
Yes, absolutely. And so thank you, first of all, for all of your delicious recipes and sharing your health journey with us today. And I hope you realize how many people that you're helping with gluten-free living that you don't even know about.
Oh, thanks, Gail. That's nice to hear. Appreciate it.
Sure. And so thank you, everyone, and have a great day. I hope you enjoyed the interview.
Thanks.